Blog Talk Radio.
I'm needing, I'm wanting, there is something about you, I need to know.
Friday night's edition of Center Stage. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. Tonight we've got a great show lined up for you. We're going to be discussing mental illness in the African-American community. Joining the panel tonight along with Christopher and AJ will be Paul Ty, along with a study group out of Dallas. For those of you who may want a clearer definition of what mental illness is, this is what my research found. Mental illness basically is considered any disease or condition that influences the way a person thinks, feels, behaves, and or relates to others and to his or her surroundings. Although the symptoms of mental illness can range from mild to severe and are different depending on the type of mental illness, a person with an untreated mental illness is often unable to cope with life's daily routines and demands. Although the exact cause of most mental illness is not known, it is becoming clear through research that many of these conditions are caused by a combination of genetic, biological, psychological, and environmental factors. And some examples of mental illness can range from schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, personality disorder, anxiety disorders, psychosis, mental retardation, borderline personality disorders, autism, dissociative identity disorder, obsessive compulsive disorder, antisocial personality disorders, insanity, dementia, depression, and of course, what we're hearing a lot about with military is post-traumatic stress disorder. So those are some of the conditions that we're going to be referring to when we're using the term tonight, mental illness. So tonight I'm going to open the phone lines up to Christopher, AJ, Paul, Ty, and the Dallas Study Group. Good evening, everyone. Welcome Center Stage.
Good evening, Carrie.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening, everyone.
Okay, I'm getting an echo. Does somebody have a computer?
Oh, that works.
Okay, is that better?
That's okay. Much better.
Okay, so the Dallas group well, starting with Paul and Ty in the Dallas group, you all are studying mental illness this month. Can you tell us a little bit about what you all are finding? Paul?
Hi, this is Tyrone.
Oh, hi, Tyrone. Mental illness in the African American community is what you all are studying this month, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about what you all have discovered in your research.
Well, based on our research, we've discovered that mental illness is a combination of things. We're looking at diet, DNA, things of this nature, and also some aspects of the environment.
So that being said, and there are a lot of factors that can contribute to it. So you all are specifically dealing with the African American community, right?
Right.
Okay. So that said, is mental illness, you know, based on you all's research, any different in the African American community than it is in the Caucasian community or any other community?
Well, yes, I do believe it is a little different because the African-American experience is different. The things that the African-American goes through on a daily basis makes his experiences, it makes his means by which to deal with mental illness different.
Christopher and AJ, y'all agree with that?
Yeah, I agree. I agree simply because even children in the African-American community has different levels of stress that they don't even know is stress.
Yeah.
And stress is one of the main components that actually breaks the body down so other things can facilitate it.
I agree. So, Christopher, when we see in our African American communities a lot of gun violence and, you know, a lot of times our children are exposed to death a lot younger than they should be, do you think that has a traumatic effect that could possibly cause mental illness down the road?
Yes, I do, and I think some of the cause, even in a lot of the studies in the African-American community, are also associated with the everything from the socioeconomic, crime, environmental. In the black community, a lot of mental illnesses stem from different things. At one time, there was a higher lead content in the black community, which led to a lot of different manifestations of mental illness. Environmental, I mean, there's studies, everything from pollution to corporate waste, a lot of things that occur those things are also factors, like the your guests are basically saying, that are factors, and then the black experience within itself. There's some things with slavery, the genetic dispositions of individuals, and just a lot of things that are similar, but a lot of things that are different from their Caucasian counterparts and communities as well.
Paul, why do you think there's a stigma in our community where mental illness is concerned?
Now, when you say stigma, are you talking about it from a negative perspective, or are you just talking about?
Yes. You know, most of the time when we talk about mental illness in our community, it's always with a cloud of embarrassment, you know, or shame that someone in our family could be not, quote-unquote, normal, you know. And so for whatever reason, we're just not willing to accept, it seems, that mental illness can exist within our families.
Right, right. Well, you know, one of the things, I think the biggest factor is it ties back to religion, right? So we don't want to be categorized as being imperfect. We want to be perceived as God created a perfect being, right? We were created in the image of God. And so if we have this mental disorder, then, you know, that means that God must have a mental disorder. So, you know, so we shy away from mental illness, you know, or we send them to the country.
Okay. So, since you went there about religion, and anybody can answer this question, does God make imperfect people? I mean, you know, is it God that would make someone with mental illness, or does that not have anything to do with God?
The conversation way out of balance.
That was
way out of balance. But see, I think an example of what he's saying is that during the days of slavery, scriptures read to the slaves basically in being subservient, in obeying a master, in turning the other cheek. None of the other Bible mattered. So just like in our churches, we pick and choose what scriptures we want to read from and what we want to matter. So we are inbred traditionally to believe what we're told. So when they tell us something, we don't usually go to the doctor. Just like there are statistics say, you know, 80% of men only go to the doctor when an ambulance comes. They're not going to preventive medicine. They're going we're going to use these old home remedies. We're going to use these remedies that used to work. Because I've seen this before, and it's passed down. So I think we are traditionally blind to all the nuances and all the things that we can understand now because of technology and because of medicine.
Well, you know, go ahead.
I'm sorry. This is Paul. Excuse me, brother. You know, I'm not trying to evade the question by any means. I mean, the second chapter of Genesis indicates that you are made in the image of God. And I think subconsciously, I think black people or African-American people, I think African-American people do not want to be associated with a mental disorder solely because they connect themselves with God. And God, if I'm crazy, then God must be crazy.
I can agree with that analogy, but I think also what Kerry was trying to get at is that in the black community, even to this day, maybe on a lesser scale, but mental illness is still considered a taboo. In other words, black individuals did not, and only recently, didn't really have access to science, to adequate medical resources, diagnosing, treatment, and so forth, when our white counterparts have. So even though I know what you're saying is true, a lot of people actually don't come forward. They think it's taboo, or they keep quiet because they do think that they don't want anybody to think that a God that they would serve would have them in that situation, when in hindsight, what a lot of individuals don't understand is that it's not so much it's a taboo, but some of the churches have I think they have perpetuated the situation, because individuals that have legitimate mental illnesses that do need to be evaluated, they do need to be, in some cases, treated with therapy, with medication, because there's a chemical imbalance. The church makes people believe that it's a demon or it's a spirit. I also believe in those entities as well, but when somebody is has schizophrenia, that's not a demon. That's a mental imbalance, and it needs to be treated. But if I've been going to church, and if I tell individuals that I have this, a lot of times they don't say, well, you need to go see a psychologist, psychiatrist, and be evaluated or this or that. They say, we need to pray and get that devil out of you. But it's not necessarily a devil, mental illness.
It's called exorcism.
If you want to call it that.
But you have to know, and just because a person has a mental illness doesn't mean that they need an exorcism.
And is that the fault of the black community with lack of understanding? I mean, we refer every question to the church, and some situations is like God gives us common sense, and we should know better and see.
But it's not lack of understanding; it's a lack of knowledge.
We perish. That's right. We perish. Well, I agree. Because according to psychology.org, basically they're saying one out of three African Americans who need mental health care receive it. So if one out of three just one out of three African Americans who need mental health care are actually receiving it, that's scary. So that means there's a whole bunch of crazy, I don't want to say crazy, but people who are seeking or needing mental health assistance are not getting it. And I apologize to anybody that just slipped, and I think it's just because that's how we have referred to it in our community. We will, off the cuff, always use the term crazy, and crazy is not acceptable. And I apologize; that was not politically correct of me to say that, but that's how we refer to it. We say Uncle Joe and Aunt Susie, they crazy, or they touched, or they a little throwed off. That's how we refer to people in our own community that we call ourselves loving, and that's how we will address their conditions. Do y'all agree with that?
Absolutely. Yeah, a lot of times people are saying, they're on the crazy pill, or they're going to go see a crazy doctor. A lot of people don't realize that it is a legitimate mental illness that is not. And in some cases, a lot of people sometimes think that individuals with mental illnesses are putting on, or they're just trying to get attention. And a lot of times, those are the individuals that really never get the attention they need, because a lot of times families, they do. They just say, oh, there's nothing wrong with her. There's nothing wrong with him. And for years, on top of years, individuals never get the medical evaluation or treatment that they may need. And that's why you probably have so many individuals that are undiagnosed and untreated in the black community.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about ADHD for one. ADHD is basically something that just recently – a term I've just recently become familiar with, like let's just say this last 20 years or so. And why is it that before that, let's just say in the generation prior, we didn't hear the term ADHD? Everything was corrected by the rod of correction. But now, this generation, it appears, every other child is ADHD, and they're medicated, and that's fixing the problem. Is that really the answer, or is some of this about discipline or lack of?
I think a lot of discipline. Young children, young people nowadays do not want to be disciplined, and there are not those adults who had that sternness about them or that desire nowadays to discipline children. So a lot of times I think a lot of the ADHD is being misdiagnosed, and you have pharmaceutical companies who have a profit motive in making sure that as many people are taking their drugs as possible. But at the same time, there are legitimate cases of children who can't sit still, who cannot attune their focus long enough to get their school lessons or to get their lessons from the teachers or whatever. And they need help. They need to be dealt with properly, and just beating them or whooping them or whatever is not going to do it. They have to have medical attention. And that's
But, you know, the question was, though, did those same type children exist in your generation? So if they didn't exist in your generation and everybody could be every misbehaving child could be corrected with the rod of correction, and it is what it is, that's just what it was. And if that didn't exist then, but it exists now, are we talking about something in the food, something in the water, or something environmental that's causing this disorder?
That too. It's certainly in our environment. It certainly is. But to go back to the rod of correction that you use, a lot of times the children, for fear of just, you know, their own self getting hurt, their own body getting hurt, would act as though they were being disciplined or they had learned their lesson. But now you find that young adults and adults my age and older, middle-aged adults, are compensating for the things that happened to them as children through alcoholism, drug abuse, and all sorts of other addictions. So there really wasn't a correction. There was just a putting off or a means by which to make them deal with their issue without bringing it to the fore in the family. But the situation is still here. People are still there. There are so many people who are addicted to drugs, addicted to alcohol, addicted to sex, addicted to so many things, and I assure you, if you go back and you trace that person or those people's addiction and the reason they are addicted, you will find that it starts at childhood.
Well, let's talk about this case, and for those of you who are not in Dallas, you may not be familiar with this, but we recently had, this week, in fact, a young man, 18 years old, you know, appeared to come from a very decent neighborhood for the most part, a Caucasian, who went to two stores, a 7-Eleven and another convenience store near him, and for no reason just shot the clerks, just shot them. One of them died and the other one survived the shooting. But, I mean, is that mental illness or is this just somebody who's been playing too many video games and just wanted to see what it felt like to kill somebody?
Yeah.
Did anybody else see that story?
I saw that, and I think that person has, at the very least, an affection disorder, somebody who's been constantly and consistently exposed to violence, and they've become desensitized to it, and so they feel like they can go and engage in that sort of behavior.
You know, Carrie.
But are you saying the exposure came from video games, or are you saying that's something that he saw in the house, maybe, you know, domestic violence or something?
It could be anything. Every human being in America today is totally immersed in violence by virtue of the TV, the movies, the music, the video games, on top of what may be going on in the house. Some people are more attuned or more susceptible to that immersion than others, and I think that young man is probably one of those.
You know, Carrie, I'll just kind of date back a little bit. So when you look at the 50s and the 60s and the 70s, you dealt with a parent that took Tylenol, Bear, may have done a little marijuana laced with some, who knows what. But today you're dealing with a parent who who's taking Prozac, Valium. I mean, the list just goes on and on. And so we're not dealing with on top of you're dealing with a parent who's smoking marijuana laced with embalming fluid and so on. And so these children are engaged in these violent video games. They engaged in foolishness at school. They engaged in foolishness with their parents and friends. And so I think a lot of it spills over. And so I think that coupled with the fact that you're already mentally unstable, to add all of these other attributes just compounds the situation.
I agree. I absolutely agree. And, you know, the thing is, though, and I say this as someone who doesn't have children, is it fair, though, that people that have children don't raise them properly, and therefore, you know, some of it, when you see the kids, you can't tell if, you know, acting out and doing like what the kid did, you know, killing the store clerk. You don't know if it's mental illness or if it's just a child that has not been reared properly.
I'm going to say this. I don't think that it's – I'm sorry. Well, I'm not going to apologize for it. That's flat out crazy for you to think that you're not – that you don't have a mental illness if you think that it's okay to walk into a store to kill somebody. Something is mentally wrong with you.
Right.
I mean,
is it just me or has anyone else noticed that people are snapping like twigs all around us? I mean, some of the crimes that we see today, 20 years ago, they didn't even exist. I mean, people are just doing things that we've never seen done before. And so is it something environmental? Because I know the television, you know, is very suggestive. So if you sit and watch a lot of television, I know that's a bad thing. It's almost programming you to do something stupid. And if you play a lot of violent video games, I'm certain that's programming you to do something stupid as well. But if you do act on some of those suggestions that come from TV and video games, whose fault is it? Or are you mentally ill just to act on it, period, or can some of it be that you picked it up from watching too much of violence from TV and video games?
Well, don't forget about the music industry, the music videos, the things that go on at school. Again, the young people are immersed in violence, and this is a violent and sexual culture. But I believe the reason why the thing has gotten so out of hand to the extent that you just mentioned, is because of vitamin deficiencies, because of a biological urge on the part of a lot of people who are not getting proper nutrition. If you're not getting enough iodine, if you're getting too much copper and not enough zinc, if you're getting not enough vitamin A, vitamin K12, niacin, these have immediate and long-lasting impacts upon the brain, especially the developing brain of a young person. A person's brain does not reach maturity until they're at least 26 years old, 25 or 26 years old. So you got 25 or 26 years there of malnutrition that person is going through, also being submerged and immersed in this culture of violence. They have poor impulse control because they do not have the proper nutrition to engage in real thinking.
And I can go there.
And for those listeners that didn't quite understand what he was talking about, if you're eating Kentucky, if you're eating taco, you know what? If you're eating a lot of fast food and you're not putting the right nutrients into your body, your body becomes susceptible to this type of behavior.
And let's understand one more thing, too, before we get off this particular part of the subject. When you eat fast food and when you eat commercially produced food, you're not eating food. You're eating a food product.
Yeah.
That's not real food. You're eating a food product, i.e., it does not have the nutrients and it does not have the vitamins and the minerals that an actual food would possess. So now you're dealing with a situation where you think you're eating food. We're getting more obese. We're getting fatter. We're getting bigger. But we're still we're getting even more malnutrition because we're not getting the vitamins and we're not getting the minerals from the food that we did 50 or 60 years ago. This is why we consume so much food, because our bodies and our minds are telling us that I'm not getting what I need. Eat more food so I can get what I need. And you're just getting more and more stuff that's not good for you.
I agree 100%. And back to that iodine, just to piggyback off of that, I understand iodine used to be in our salt, but it's not anymore. But you can get it in, I think, vitamin supplement form, and it does give mental clarity, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. It's still in salt. If you get the I think the Morton brand salt with the little girl with the umbrella on it,
mm-hmm.
but you
mm-hmm.
have to read the label. Some of their songs will say this product does not provide iodine, a necessary nutrient, and sometimes it will say it does provide iodine. Now, the problem here is the average African-American person who's living on a fixed income, when they go to buy salt, they're buying the cheapest one. And
right.
the cheapest one is the one that does not have iodine in it.
Mm.
So now you're giving food to impressionable minds that are not fully developed. You're giving a substance to them that does not support the growth of their hypothalamus. It does not support the growth of their endocrine system. And it does not support the growth of their brain structures. So you have girls who are 9, 10, 11 years old who are fully developed because of the fat in the food that they're eating, but they do not have the mental capacity because they're not getting those vitamins and minerals. And iodine is one of the chief ones. Magnesium, potassium, these are extremely important. The minerals, the trace minerals, are extremely important for brain function and brain maturity.
I agree. Let me ask you all, is it in some cases that the African-American community doesn't even really acknowledge mental illness as a medical condition? Is it that we are so far removed from going to a psychologist to seek help when we're depressed or, you know, if we have anxiety or, you know, if we're feeling suicidal? Is it that we really don't get that the seriousness of mental illness, and so therefore we don't even really consider it a true medical condition?
Well, I think that you, first of all, I don't think that you have the financial resources to go and seek the help that's needed. Okay, and so when we start talking about the discretionary income, so we don't view this as an immediate danger. So when we don't, now we see a heart attack as something that's relatively instant. And so if our heart is bothering us, we immediately go to the emergency room. But if you're hearing voices in your brain, or you know, if you're feeling depressed, you think that that's something that you can handle. And so you don't think that there's an importance to go and seek medical attention. And so because you grew up in a society where you've had doctors experiment on you, you know, I'm not going to allow you to manipulate my brain more than it's already manipulated.
I agree with that. Okay. So when do you seek help? When do you know depression has gone on too long, anxiety has gone on too long, suicidal, you know, feelings have gone on too long? When do you seek help? Anybody?
Well, I think that if you're waiting on the individual to determine that, I think you're not going to get a determinant fact. I think that what needs to happen is that's the importance of surrounding yourself around family so that family can make that determining factor for you, okay? It's important for your mother, your father, your sister, your brother to determine something is just not quite right here, and we need to intervene and take immediate action.
And don't forget, too, compensate. The majority of the people who find themselves in that situation with a psychological situation compensate through alcohol, through drugs, through sport, through sex. We do something to remove ourselves from these feelings and not go seek professional help. And again, like Paul said, I mean, with the Tuskegee experiment and all the things, all the bad history that African Americans have dealing with the medical establishment in this country, you don't want to actually go and have someone experiment on you or put you under hypnosis or do something to you because you don't trust them.
Well, Christopher Bonds, you're in the medical field. Where do you seek help? Where is a safe place to seek help if you think you're in trouble mentally?
Well, I'll kind of try and address that twofold. The first is that I think your host, I think what they were getting at is individuals, in a sense, like being first responders. I know that they passed a bill in relationship to what we're talking, that was the dealing with the budget to keep the government open for 2014. And in that, there was a House bill where they approved a lot of money specifically for mental health, but they set aside $15 million of the money that they allotted for mental health for what's called mental health first aid training. That's for police, judges, first responders, social workers, college campus, schools, individuals, and they even have some grants for that. One of the things that has to be done in terms of an individual recognizing, they may not know what it is, they may not have background, clinical training, and so forth, but as early as possible, and a lot of times that could be done if individuals put more stock in preventative preventative evaluations, physical evaluations, going to their providers on an annual basis, having the access, first of all, so that when you notice something changing, you may not necessarily know what it is, but you know it's out of the norm, and then you would be able to have trust and faith and know that you would be able to go somewhere, whether you had insurance or not, to have access to get the appropriate evaluation and or treatment that you would need. But then the other thing is that the I think the black community, we have to do a better job to try and make individuals, the average individual, aware of some of the basic things with a lot of the common mental illnesses, so that if you see those signs, those symptoms, that you may either want to try and get that individual assistance, or in some cases, you notify the authorities. I know in the military, we do receive mental health first aid training. I provide some. Other providers do as well, so that individuals recognize the signs, the symptoms, the cues, the things that it's just not out of the ordinary, but you know something is different, and thereby you might be able to get the individual some help. And in some cases, when you see the signs and they're significant enough, sometimes people have to be committed because they do have a particular situation that could become very harmful to themselves or someone else.
Mm. If you just tuned in, you come Center Stage tonight for the topic, mental illness in the African-American community. We're talking about mental illnesses like schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, anxiety disorder, depression, dementia, insanity, obsessive compulsive disorder. You name it, we're talking about it tonight. And we're trying to get to the who, what, when, where, and how about this disorder, who suffers from it, what is considered mental illness, when to seek help, where to seek help, and how to not miss the warning signs. So let's talk about that. Let's jump off right there. What if someone within our community, let's just say, was suffering from mental illness, and maybe they didn't know it, what would be the warning sign? What would be the warning sign? Anybody?
Exclusion?
I guess not dealing with any specific, but in general, significant changes, reckless behavior, talking to themselves, and noticing things that they were doing that are out of the ordinary for that particular individual. Risk-taking behaviors, things like when you see people who were once good to go on their job, very outgoing, now they're kind of reclusive. They've talking about, you know, giving away all of this. You know, we see that a lot in the military with soldiers dealing with suicidal ideation, homicidal ideation. You know, they're very upset. And a lot of things that I see as the cues and signs. Some of them are small, but just because of my clinical training, not that I can see everything, but a lot of things I do see in an individual if I know them, and then sometimes when I'm dealing with them on a regular basis. But a lot of times it's not great big things, and then sometimes it is, but in most people it's the small things that a lot of individuals are not necessarily trained. But if they would at least have a basic understanding, those are some of the things that I think in a general broad spectrum in terms of mental illness that you might see.
Okay.
Carrie, Carrie, if I'd like to offer two things as well. I'm going to try and keep this as balanced as I possibly can. If you're a woman, if you find yourself in a heated argument or a heated conversation, and after this conversation you go to the refrigerator and you begin to start eating or you begin to shop, you know, I think you need to go and seek some mental help. You know, I think if you're a male, if you find yourself sitting in front of the television playing video games for 3 and 4 hours every day, I think you need to go and seek some help. These are things that are just not normal for adult individuals.
No, okay? That's not. No, wait a minute. By that definition, it's a whole bunch of crazy women out there. I'm sorry. Now, you know that's not a fair example of when you've gone over the edge. Not eating and shopping. Women do that all the time. Right? Right?
But maybe he's talking about, like, excessive. Well, some things are can become a form of like a coping mechanism and trying to cope, but not yet, because coping doesn't necessarily mean you're trying to address the problem. It just means you're trying to cope with whatever's going on at that particular time or the fallout from that. But I think maybe what he's getting at, he can correct me if he's wrong, that some of what happens is a lot of times people become creatures of habit. But then sometimes people are doing things that then becomes harmful. So, yes, if you're shopping to the point that now you're spending more money than you really have, if you're eating more than you normally eat or you're eating unhealthy, I think that then can become something that is problematic and you should seek help.
Okay. Listen, I'm just saying then, listen, ladies, y'all need to listen to this show and immediately seek help in the morning, because I think that I don't know, just from a woman's standpoint, and I'm the only woman on this panel that's listening. One is in the listening audience. Get on the phone and help me out here. But I don't know if that was a fair assessment, and Paul's going to get in trouble for that one. But anyway, I don't know if that was a fair assessment of when a woman is.
Let me make it a little bit fast.
Maybe you ought to clarify. How much shopping are we talking about?
I'm not trying to clarify anything. I mean, it is what it is. When you are engaged in a situation where you can't handle or you can't constructively have a conversation and address the problem, and then you result to eating, overeating, or indulging in habits that are just not are outside of the norm, that is a problem. Okay, it's just like men. You have men who engage in, who can't handle a conversation, and they come home and they beat their wives, or they have an argument with their wives or their girlfriend or their significant other, and they want to have sex. Okay, that's not a normal behavior.
Right.
Okay.
And you know, I have known people in my life who could go from 0 to 80 in a split second. And I always call that crazy. You know, if you're engaged in a conversation with someone, and I'm not saying they're crazy, I'm saying the behavior is crazy. If you're talking to someone, and I'm saying that speaks to mental illness, let's just say that. If you are engaged in a conversation with someone and it becomes heated from 0 to 80, you know, in a split second, that person probably is dealing with some stuff that you might not want to deal with. I mean, in terms of continuing that conversation. And I've had conversations with people where, you know, we're disagreeing on a situation, and it's very calm at 1 minute, and then all of a sudden it's just like they take off and go somewhere else. And I think there's a whole lot of people like that in our world where, you know, they don't have very good social skills, and so if they don't feel like they're winning in a conversation or a debate or an argument, then the conversation just takes off and it goes somewhere extremely, you know, aggressive or whatever. I think there's a lot of signs of mental illness, let's just say that. And I've seen it in a couple of people, and it's really concerning, like I said, when someone can go from 0 to 80 in a split second, when 1 minute they're calm and then the next minute you know, they're ready to tear your head off. And I'm just seeing that in cases. And I think what I'm trying to say, y'all, is there's a whole lot more mental illness in our community than we even realize. And I think a lot of people are functioning crazy in terms of their behavior. We accept it as normal, but it's really not acceptable. You know, we accept crazy behavior all the time as okay when, in a lot of cases, those people are mentally ill. Would y'all agree with that?
Yes, I would definitely agree with that.
We'll just say, that's just them, but really what they're doing is not normal, you know, but we'll accept it because that's just how we know that person to be. But in reality, I think if we looked at, you know, most of the people in our community, we'd find out that a lot more people than we've even acknowledged have mental illness. Yeah, we're going to go to the phone lines. We're going to pick up area code 314-381. Good evening. Welcome to Center Stage.
Yeah, it's Pianki.
Hey, Pianki, how are you?
Doing fine.
Good.
You know, on this subject of African-American community and mental illness, there's obvious mental ill, there's obvious behavior, then there's the not-so-obvious behavior.
Okay.
And I can name a lot of things that one surely would like to, one surely would need to, say is it has to be something wrong mental with the people.
What are those behaviors?
And we can start with a whole lot of things. I'm going to start off, we can start off with, you know, we can say religion, one.
Mm.
And we can say education, especially with your children, two. You can say abortion, three. Anytime an ethnic group abort over half their population within three decades, you have to kind of wonder what the heck's going on with this mentality. The economy, you open up your markets where anybody come in and just run and ravage through them as if, it was a field day. So that's just, what, about five that I named?
Well, the last one I think is about the New World Order, but I won't go there tonight. So I think that's not crazy. That's intentional. To do that to your own people is a form of insanity, I guess you could say. But I think that's very deliberate. Just putting that out there.
Well, which one you want to pick to talk about? I mean, let's leave religion alone, okay?
I think you're going to open up another can of worms if you go with the abortion issue tonight, so I don't know if you want to fix that either.
We can leave abortion alone.
We leave religion and abortion out of it. And then what were we left with? We were left with, you know, basically, what was it?
Let's talk about education. Anytime, and we could go to politics too, but anytime you leave your children in a system that has a track record like the public school system. And then, too, when blacks are polled, Carrie, you know that yourself, blacks overwhelmingly say, we want school choice.
Mm-hmm.
But then you got these Vanguard organizations, and you know who they are, they say, no, you don't want that. Something's got to be wrong with people to continue to even believe that things are going to change.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about looking at this, observing this for at least the last 40 years in modern time. I mean, not even talking about going back to 1954. So something's got to be wrong with the mindset of the people who continue to depend on that entity to change things around when there's no signs that it's ever going to change around.
Well, you know what? I'll go here. What I consider insanity, since you're going along those lines, I think it's insanity since everybody on the phone line is an African-American male. I think it's insanity when you – meaning African-American males, can
mm-hmm.
plant your seed anywhere, first of all, and then walk off and leave it and never care about his well-being. I think that's insanity.
Oh, you're absolutely right. You know what else is insanity amongst African-American males? To let
what?
Their economic markets be penetrated by foreigners who just run wild with it.
Yeah.
They're supposed to be the ones that protect that. That's stupid.
But I think, and I will be very careful because we're going just a little off subject, but I think something has happened in the African-American community where for whatever reason, the female has taken lead, and most of the African-American men are coming off as weak. To me, that's insanity.
Well, they're coming off as if they're infeminized. Yes, you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
And I don't mean the ones that you see on the street all the time. I mean, you can look at it any other look at the ones that's on the sports commentary. Look at the things that said that they don't even defend.
Well,
would anybody on the panel agree with that?
I agree with that, and there's a lot, not as an excuse, but there's a lot dealing with what the subject is in terms of specifically black men, and in terms of there's been quite a few things that have happened in the past dealing with slavery, dealing with genocide, dealing with the emasculation of black men, and so forth. It is a known fact, not just with the culture and the history behind black men and women coming from Africa.
Did we lose Christopher?
Intelligence, the civilizations, and the things that when black people get on one accord, even under circumstances that other cultures probably would not have been able to survive, how blacks can. So even today's time, we're dealing with cultures within cultures or subcultures within the black community whereby you still do have strong black men that are trying to advocate to bring back what the black community once had with the economy, with I think the moral status, the values, and the socioeconomic piece. But I think what is happening is that there is a deliberate attack. And I'm not saying this as an excuse. I mean, my dad always told me that as long as you know who's trying to do what to you, that's half the battle. So when you kind of know what you're up against, without that unity, there's a lot of things that in the social and the political arena, we're not at the table. And until we can then actually advocate and start getting more representatives, more people that look like us, not just to be at the table, because we have a lot of folks that are at particular tables, but they don't represent us. But if we can get back to that unity, I think a lot of what we're dealing with is that we'll be able to socialize and be at the table so that some of what's being talked about now, we can in a sense, deal with that. But until we're back at the table, it's hard.
I would like to add one thing, you know, because I kind of agree with everybody, but I think there are some particulars left out on this particular side of the issue.
Mm-hmm.
See, when we were on the other side of the tracks, we had our own businesses. The integration process took away a lot of the things that we had, not because we gave them up, because there were red lines and there was issues that we weren't educated, we didn't have the knowledge to approach or to address. So it's like starting a race, but they didn't invite you to the race to, you ran in the 400, they didn't invite you to the other team had already ran 800 yards and they didn't want you to catch up. So we're still in the catch-up process. We still have families that are first or second generation college students. We have all these things that were manipulated or maybe on purpose or just because of our circumstances and situation. So there's a lot of things we can say a mental illness, but there's a lot of things that because we didn't have the knowledge to do so, we didn't have access to, I guess, to the right economics, to the issue of economics, to, you know, what was it? I'm trying to think of what they're trying to, you know, just like now Congress is taking away so many rights and so many things that gave us a leg up. A helping hand, not a hand. It wasn't a handout. It was a helping hand to catch up.
Hey,
but,
Carrie.
You know, I think.
Hey, Carrie.
Okay.
Hey, you know, how neurotic is it that you have a group of men who understand that the system that we are part of does not have our best interest in mind, but yet we continue to try and try and try to assimilate and to be accepted within a culture that that destroys our boys, that destroys our girls, that destroys our women, and refuse to allow us to move into the upper echelons of this society. What, how neurotic is that? But yet we still want to be accepted on a day-to-day basis. We refuse to take our rightful place in society because we want to drive a Bentley. We don't want to, we call ourselves Africans, but we refuse to even go to Africa. We call ourselves Africans, but we can't even name 10 countries on the continent of Africa. Many of us are still calling Africa a country. How neurotic is that?
Well, you know, the guy that was talking about the politics, I give you your representatives that look like you, and I will buy them from under you.
Ooh.
Because you don't have the businesses that can finance the campaigns of your politician. Therefore, they are not beholden to you. All you do is vote.
Wow. You know, if I could piggyback off something that was said a minute ago, I think why so much insanity or mental illness has crept into our community is this. The day the roles reversed and women took the lead and we no longer could count on men to be the strong one in our families, when men, you know, cease to exist in the family anymore, when we as women had to take a role as provider and protector. You said say provider and protector, you know, father and mother.
You care. The African American man could never protect you.
Why
never
is that?
Protect
you. Why is that?
Why?
Why?
When an African American man, go back to the 60s, go back to the 70s.
Okay.
When you stood there and you saw your own father get beat by the police officer. The police officer beat your mother while your father standing there.
Mm-hmm.
And you tell me that the African-American man can protect you? Please.
Okay.
The African-American man is weak.
Yeah.
He is no longer a warrior. What? You're talking about a man that suffers from serious mental illness that would allow the atrocities that have occurred to the black family structure here in America. You're talking about a serious mental illness within itself.
Yeah, the black man, for the most part, I hate to say it like this, but a foregone conclusion, as well as the concept of black power, black economics. These things don't matter to the wider world and the wider society. You're only as good as who you vote for. That's it. The other ethnic groups are beginning to make economic and political headway, and they will overcome and overtake the African-American vote and the African-American economic power very soon. You've got to realize that the mental illness that the African-American man suffers, the African-American people, period, but the African-American man especially, is more akin to PTSD than anything. He is shell-shocked. He is afraid for his life. He is afraid for his freedom. He's afraid for his children. He's stuck in stasis. He can't go anywhere or do anything. And then the fact that the African-American woman, as well as the other ethnic groups, have to some extent colluded against him has made him even weaker in his own mind and in the minds and the eyes of the wider world. When the black man is led to the church, and led to this place and led to that place by the African-American woman, and he has no say-so in his house, he has no say-so in his place of worship. His when he says don't do something, it's his opinion, it's not a fact, if he's married and has children, then you have a situation where you have a detached man, detached from society.
But you know what, the black man cannot cannot, you know, and I know the Bible says that a woman should be submissive to her mate and all that, but you can't have a black man who checks out on you and goes and use drugs to cope with life, you know, finds himself in and out of prison, and yet he calls him king of his household. You, respect is earned. And so, you know, when you wonder why mental illness is creeping in our community, it's because he has fried his brain on crack, and the woman has been left to deal with it all by herself. And so she's stressing out, which is probably, you know, causing mental illness. And then he's, you know, abused his brain with substance abuse. Okay.
Wait a minute. Let's not put the cart before the horse. Hold on just a minute. Let's not put the cart before the horse.
Okay.
The black man is a product of the black woman. It's black women who have black boys and black babies, not the black man. So he's the product of the black woman. Now, the things that he has gone through in life, in existence, have made him desire these particular kinds of coping mechanisms. So
when you say he, we, you mean we have gone through. Because his struggle is our struggle, right?
Black women have gone through a great deal, too. But, like you said, now you all are Christians. If it is the black man's charge to be the provider and the protector of the woman and the children, then he must be allowed to do so. And if everything and everyone is against him, what can he do but try to cope? This is the rise of gangs, and you have the rise of black men desiring to go to the military and black men who are taken out on dope and whatnot. It's a coping mechanism.
Well, brother, you are absolutely dead on, Steve. I've been listening to you for the last 5 minutes. I'm very proud of what you're saying. And although I came into the program sound like I was slapping black folks upside the head, but I wasn't intentionally doing it. I just wanted to throw it out there and see how the response is. I should know better, being that it's Carrie's show. She has some very intelligent people that follow her.
Thank you.
But we have to do something to change this thing around. And we, you know, we can't make no major changes, but we can talk and put suggestions out there. Our biggest problem is economics. Economics is our biggest problem. Black man today is not the black man. He's just a black male, and he can't take care of family because he just don't have the skills to do so. I always say we got to go back to them young ones, and we got to steer them in the right direction. Our children should be going into the highest paying fields that there is. Our children shouldn't be going into, you know, I hear people say, well, that ain't what they want to do. Well, damn it, you're going to have to steer them into the position.
I disagree because we were just talking about black owning black businesses and all those other things. See, we kind of sound like Fox News right now because I know black men that are raising their kids, that are mentoring other students. I do that myself. And I see the positiveness in our students once they see a black man actually talking to them as though they have some relevance, as though they can garner the respect that they think they get on the street standing on the corner. See, the difference
We're not talking about a few now.
No, wait. I'm not finished. I'll let you finish.
But go ahead.
No, I sit here as quiet as I could for the longest. I tried to interject about 5 minutes ago. I just left it alone.
All right, go ahead, sir.
Okay. No, but the point I was making is there are business structures. There's all these economic things set up by the government. We say we're not using what we have, but there's things that we can do in our community to lead them in a direction to where we can start the entrepreneurship again with our young men, bringing in other people to actually bring businesses in our community. Because if we start spending our dollars, we spend the most money of any ethnic group in the United States, but we don't spend it with us.
Well, blacks don't spend. That's a misnomer too. That's a misnomer about that $1.1 trillion.
No, it's not a misnomer.
You're working for somebody.
Let's put our mouth where the dollars up. We make up less than, some say 12.5%, some say 14% of the total population. Okay, so 12.5%, 14% of the total population don't, we may spend a lot of money, But let's be honest with ourselves. We don't make that much money where we're contributing that much to the economic structure here in America.
Well, that's true. But of that 14%, about 5.5% of that are black males. And of that number, there's approximately 1.2, 1.3 million black men in jail right now at an average of $59,000 a year per individual. So there is a value and a market on black men, and I completely agree with you. There's everything from economic to every type of social genocide that's out there. Now, I disagree in terms of black men not being able to make a turnaround and bring themselves back up. I do agree that in terms of voting, but when you vote, then you have to hold individuals accountable. It's not over just because now you have the liberty to vote. I also think that at the end of the day, if black men get together and piece by piece, block by block, take it back, that you can. I don't have the defeatist attitude, but I also know, and I'm very realistic, although I don't love money, I know we live in a money-driven world, and the economy piece and the jobs piece and the infrastructure is very important. But we could, if we want to, start making that comeback. I'm not saying we no longer have the capabilities and our white counterparts have us. Yeah, they have a 250-year head start. But that doesn't mean that we can't do something at the grassroots level, because that's really where it's going to come from. It's not going to come from, hey, Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton, both of them are worth in excess of $10 million. They're not thinking about us. So for us to think that we're going to be able to go to some of these groups or organizations and they're going to help us get our heyday back, it's not going to happen. But I do believe if we invest in our families, in our neighborhoods, in our communities, and we collectively come together so that after we have a talk show, then what? Then are we going to then start meeting? Are we going to start trying to coordinate and strategize for the betterment of our future and hold leadership accountable?
And you know what? I'm glad you said that. Even though we're off subject just a little bit, we're going to get back on subject. I know everybody on this line, and we're talking about brilliant minds on this line. I mean, we're talking about if these brothers put their minds together, they could do anything. But when is the black community going to recognize and realize that's the only way that we're going to get where we need to get to? That's it. Well, I mean, without it, we can forget it.
Here, I will say it again. When you are an African-American male living in America, trying to continue to assimilate within a society that does not want you to participate, you are neurotic. In a term that is used in war called retreat, it is time to retreat and go back to your base. This is something that we don't want to address, but we want to continue to try to assimilate and to get along with those who do not want us here. It is time to retreat and go back to our source where we have a power structure and we can rebuild there and then become a strong force to reckon with. When you are in the belly of the beast, it is difficult to come out. The only way out of the belly of the beast is through the you-know-what, and that's the asshole.
Okay. Y'all are a mess. Let's just say that. We're all subject go ahead, Chris.
I mean, I'm going to say this. I know we're trying to like stay away from religion, but if you just purely base that on what you just said, and that there is no Godhead entity, I would agree with you. But because I have faith and I believe that there is, and there have been things in my life that has happened where I'm not essentially trying to assimilate, but I'm trying to do the best that I can, and things happen. And based on that, this happening, had it not been for what I believe is a higher and stronger Lord in my life that it wouldn't have gone the way that it did. I do agree with you on the one hand in terms of we are fighting an uphill battle. It is, because almost invariably, even the black folks who make it, that become millionaires and billionaires, they're basically still held on a particular leash. And they just continue to remind you, you have this, but just remember, you're still black. You've not been accepted. So no matter how hard you try and assimilate, you'll always be black. You're never going to be white.
Well,
not that I want to be.
This thing about being accepted, leave that alone. Ain't nobody's gonna give you part of their power. You got to take it from them. And you know another thing about faith, the slave master was praying to the Lord that you wouldn't die before you got that field of cotton picked. Believe me. Now, you know, and economics is our big problem. The average black person is not gonna solve this. They just trying to survive. You couldn't even throw that on them. But out of this, you know, blacks have all the necessary skills and talents they need to turn their situation around. And the people that is trained, that's running other people's businesses, portion of their corporation, you have to wonder at what point in time do they not recognize these huge economic markets that we exist in, and when will they come out of those corporations and start competing against them to really make themselves well.
Sister Carey, let me make this statement real quick. I think we have gotten off task here.
Oh, y'all promised me you got to get back on subject after you make this statement. Okay, Ty, go ahead.
Well, we're dealing with the show is about the mental illnesses that African Americans suffer, and I believe it's not an economic problem or a social problem. It's a psychological problem. Until we get to the point where the African American man can be a man, and see, that's a psychological issue. The African-American woman can be a woman. Again, we're dealing with a psychological issue. You can have all the economics you want in the world. It's not going to do you any good because you're going to constantly give it away. What's that old saying that they say about black people? If he wins $1 million, he's going to give it right back to us within a couple of months, within a year, because there is no psychological basis on his behalf to help himself through helping his own people, through helping other black people. So until we deal with the psychology of why we can't come together, we can talk about coming together all day long, but if we don't deal with the psychology of why we can't, if we don't deal with the psychology of why we're the largest ethnic group, spending consumer ethnic group in this country, yet we have nothing to show for it, until we deal with that from a psychological point of view, we really don't have anything. Economics means nothing if you cannot better your own condition, and you cannot better the condition of your children and the people who look like you.
Okay, then let's hang right there. Let me jump in for a second here. Let's hang right there. Let's talk about the insanity of the fact that every other group comes together but the African-American.
Well,
why is it that the only group that can't get it together? And I know we can blame it on slavery, but I was not I didn't experience slavery. So I can't – I will not use it as my excuse.
To say black people not together is a misnomer.
We're together?
Yeah, you are.
What's the
percentage of blacks in Atlanta? What's the percentage of blacks in North Carolina and Wilmington? Blacks make up 37% of the state of Mississippi, over 70% of the population in 18 counties on either the east or west side of the Mississippi River. Blacks make up
37%
of Louisiana.
Because they're masked in certain places does not make them come together.
They are together. Those are economic markets that every other ethnic group, immigrant group, realize when they come here. They don't ask blacks to get together. They just go into where they are together, and they control the economics in those areas. Economics is the main thing.
Or is he missing what I'm saying? I'm saying this. You know, when you look at blacks as a whole, we do
all
not.
All blacks is not the same, Carrie. You know
right.
that.
Right.
But
all blacks are not the same. Why would you want them to do something that anybody else? There's a difference between blacks and African Americans. So they're not the same. But it's one thing that they do, they have huge population centers, about anywhere from 12, and some people say 22. I was looking at a pen map. Those are economic markets that we should control.
But we don't.
But you, yes.
Is anybody understanding my question when I say we as a community have never come together? Because, first of all, let's start here. Why is it that we live in what we call a hood, by our own definition, but we don't even treat where we live with respect? You know, if you don't care about where you live, nobody else is going to care. And so we don't protect our neighborhoods. We don't keep our neighborhoods tidy. We don't care for our homes. We don't care for our children. We allow gang violence to come into our community. We're saturated by violence. We don't care about the education of our children. I mean, that's pure insanity. I mean, as a people, if you want to say collectively, we're all crazy because we're not doing what we should for our community. Other groups do. Other groups make sure that their kids are educated.
There are black communities that do just that.
Okay, where are they?
We have them here in Missouri.
When you look at us as a whole, we're not. But
listen, when you look at as a whole, all African Americans, all blacks are not the same.
Oh, I get that, and I think I know where you're going, and I get that.
I mean, it's the fact. You weren't even taken from the same place on the African continent. But the thing that is the same is that they form huge economic markets that we should control.
Why don't you?
Okay.
Because out of those, to control those economic markets, you require the formation of cartels that specializing in certain categories of things that expended in those economic markets. Why do not black cartels form to control the lunch programs in your public schools? Why is this French and UK companies that's doing it? They're your children.
Yes, they are.
We're going to get back to these cartels.
Pardon me?
Well, you know what? Because we don't come together, just like I just said. If we,
right.
You know what?
There is no unity among African Americans. There is no unity among African Americans.
Exactly.
Because
just
like the gentleman is saying, we do not have common goals. We do not have common goals because we do not see things alike. You can have a Korean and a Japanese person and a Chinese person and a person from Myanmar come over here, and they all see themselves as Asians, and they all work together. Irregardless of their language or their culture or what part of the Asian Peninsula they come from. So the thing of where we come from in different places in Africa doesn't hold water. The fact that we have a shared culture and a shared experience should unify us, and it did prior to the days of integration. But because we refuse to look at and deal with the hard issues in our community, we cannot unify. If you're a Muslim and I'm a Christian and he's a Hebrew Israelite, and then you got gangbangers, drug dealers, Black Panther Party, they're all over the place. We're not unified because we're not dealing with those core issues. We got plenty of money.
Well, the Muslims.
I don't know why any black person doesn't have a car or have a TV. We got plenty of money. We just don't have that unification because we're
The Nation of Islam at one time was a cohesive group here of a quarter of a million strong, and they were the largest employer of black people in the country. But the things have changed. So they did do what they were supposed to do.
You said they did. What are they doing now?
Well, we know the history of the Nation of Islam and what happened there. But the thing, and you have had Christian groups. You had Leon Sullivan, who started that one organization that trained over 800,000 people across the country. So, yes, they have done things periodically in the past, but we're not doing it now to the extent that we should. There are good things that black groups are coming together to do on the economic scene, not only in this country, but in other countries, too. But it's nowhere near the number that it should be.
Absolutely. If you just tuned in, you come to Center Stage tonight for the topic mental illness in the African American community. And we're talking about all forms of mental illness and why it is that it's so prevalent in our communities and what we should be doing about it. I mean, that's what we're talking about. And mental illness I mean, it comes in mild forms and it comes in severe forms. And we as a community have never really embraced it as something that we really should be concerned about and seeking to make certain that those that are amongst us that are suffering from mental illness get the help they need. And so those are the kind of things we're talking about. We're going to go to the phone lines. We're going to go to area code 901-299. Good evening. You're on Center Stage.
I was with Sister Carrie. It's an honor to be on. I'm really enjoying this show. I've been listening since the last hour. This is Brother Ron.
Yeah, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm glad. Your panel is doing a great job. Y'all doing an excellent job. One piece, like the unification thing, I think is interesting. The brother touched on it just recently. It's the religion. Mm-hmm. You think about Jewish people, why people envy the quote-unquote Jewish people. Like I just came from New York a couple weeks ago, and I had the chance to tour Williamsburg, Brooklyn, and the tour guide was saying how the Hasidic Jews, and I don't know if people know who Hasidic Jews are, but those are people that man, were all black with hats on. They got pig tails or, you know, curls. And they were talking about how they don't go to secular educational institutions, but every block, it seemed like, they had yellow school buses with their own academies. They controlled their economics and their education. And you talk about the Asians. Don't get it twisted. The Chinese and Japanese did not get along for centuries. The Irish and the English do not get along, but they got their religion. Their God looks just like them. And I think about Elijah Muhammad understood that. And that's why the religion piece is so important. Marcus Garvey understood that. Haile Selassie, look at Ethiopia. That's a Christian nation. That's like the oldest Bible is found in Ethiopia. The Ark of the Covenant is said to be Ethiopian. Haile Selassie was treated differently from other Africans. Ethiopia was never conquered by colonialism. Yes, Italy invaded Ethiopia, but it was never conquered like the rest of Africa was. So there's things you got to think about. Your religion is how you see yourself. Do your God identify with your struggle? Do your God look like you? And if your God does not look like you, how in the hell you stay up in that church? Because how can you have as many churches as liquor stores in the black community and have all this type of hell and strife going on in our community? And another piece I'll touch upon, how much is mental illness in the black community the result of white supremacy and capitalism? It's a lot of black men and women that went to jail just for looking at white folks in the eye, just for standing on the sidewalk too long when a little white kid walked by. So you got a lot of our people, even the George Stoney Jr. case in South Carolina where the young black man was the youngest person to ever put to death in the literature in the 20th century. When I interviewed his brother, who's almost 80 years old now, he's still having traumatic flashbacks from that incident. Now they're trying to have another case. You think about a 14-year-old kid that weighs less than 95 pounds, barely 5 feet tall. They say he killed two white girls with a railroad spike. I mean, he was tried, and 30 days later, he was put to death. Never filed an appeal on his health. His family was ran out of town because it was threatened by lynching. The whole family was threatened to be lynched. And the ironic thing is that he helped look for the white girls. The white girls asked him what was the best place to find flowers. His sister was on the porch with him, and he actually helped with the search party to find the white girls. But he never had a fair trial in court. So I'm thinking about us. I look at how Richard Sherman, the response to Richard Sherman last week, the football player. Here's a guy who got the second highest GPA in his graduating class at Stanford. He's working on his master's. He came out the hood. He's doing good. Never had a criminal record, but now he's called a thug.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he made a white girl Justin a little bit Bieber nervous. Is called a bully.
Right. No, he's called a troubled kid. It's like Eminem is called trouble at first, and Tupac was called demented and a monster. But like Thug Life said, he said, the hell you give little infants, elf everyone. That was Thug Life.
But, you know,
so
I hear what you're saying, and I'm sure that you would agree that trying to change how people look at you, we need to forget about that and go ahead and do what we got to do. Simple as that.
It's a religion piece. It's a religion piece, though.
Yeah, it's a religion piece. Look what the Somalis in Minnesota's done. They're Muslims. They have formed their own Sharia bank. They've got the African Development Center that financed their businesses and their homes interest-free. They came here as refugees, and look what they're doing. So the things can be done. We just got to have a group of people that sit down and put their heads together and say, look, this is what we're going to do. And let me say something about starting entrepreneurs. You cannot go to Asians and buy what you want to open up a retail store and sell, competing against them agents' cousins across the street, they're never going to give you family prices.
Mm-hmm.
You got to manufacture and produce it yourself.
Yes, sir.
And this is from somebody who has their own business, right, Pianki?
I was a structured steel director. I used to put up buildings like the one that fell out in New York on 9/11.
Okay. And so, but you know what y'all are saying, and I'm hearing y'all, but everybody on this phone is intelligent. I know everybody that's on here. Everybody on this phone line is intelligent. But y'all keep saying we need to put our heads together, but the question is when?
That's,
you know,
a good
question.
Well, I think the time is now and not tomorrow, as they say. And the other thing is that I think a lot of what's being talked about as we're on this topic is it's also going to take a degree of like was said earlier, not looking at the white establishment to validate us. I mean, it could be something as simple as I know this brother has published a book, or I know this brother has a small publishing company, and maybe if I'm going to publish a book, I need to – maybe I would traditionally go to my white counterpart, but maybe we need to start talking about how can I invest and reinvest in my own community or my own people so that we can then get capital, create capital, so that we can reinvest and get a lot of our own things going. Yes, it takes money. But if I'm spending, that was like we spoke about before. Yes, Walmart is undeniably basically cheap, and a lot of folks go there. But if the larger picture and the larger cause is to reinvest and black folks don't own the Walmarts, then I need to get something established that black folks can and black folks will spend their money at. And I'm even willing to pay a little bit more money for something to reinvest so that at the end of the day we can have something here for future generations and not just kind of like a sharecropper's mentality.
Well, where you use Walmart, you use Walmart affirmative action by manufacturing and producing in West Africa, bringing back into the United States using the AGOA Act, which permits you to bring things back into this country due to tariff-free that's produced over in West Africa. You go to Walmart, you go to Target, you go to Macy, you go to Kmart and say, I want 15% of your shelf space to put my goods. You got my people coming up in here. You're in my, on the outskirts of the hood. We want 15% of the shelf space in order to display our goods.
That's simple, huh? Well, you know what? I think the most insane market there is the beauty market for African-American women. I mean, the amount of money that's spent on hair and nails is crazy. And the fact
it's
that
good
that
market
is cornered.
But you
got to
manufacture and produce, Sherry.
I'm sorry, what?
You got to manufacture and produce. You can't go to Korea and say,
I mean, the Asian
sell
people
to wholesale.
Somebody, I mean, you can buy it, but why are you not selling it? I mean, because you know that there's a market for it. Why are we spending that much money with Asian people? That's insanity. That's a form of insanity.
There's one word, Karen.
What?
It's neurosis. You lack the ability. See, one of the things that, and I know that your audience, we continue to skirt around it, but when you are a product of when you're an ex-slave, you were not taught economics.
Yeah.
You were not taught how to be educated. You were taught to be told what to do and to follow instructions. Your instructions are to be a consumer, to be a thug, to be one that listens to the female entity in the household because she will keep you safe. We deal with a serious mental genocide problem here that cannot be reversed. Now, I know some of you all have hope and faith and belief that this can be changed, but the rabbit hole runs way too deep. If you think that the people in power right now will change how many people must go to prison in order to sustain the criminal justice system on an annual basis, then you got another thing coming. If you think the medical industry is going to stop giving you junk so that they can continue to treat you with diabetes, heart attack, lung disease, and the list goes on and on, you got another thing coming. You will not succeed in this society as a whole because the system is not designed for you to succeed. Now you must.
Well, I disagree with that, brother. I know what I done.
You're talking about top 10%, brother. You ain't talking about as the man.
That's all. Well, that's what WDD Boy said about the 10%. As I told you before, you know. I'm not going to try to stop black youth from buying spinning reels. There's nothing wrong with that. The problem with the spinning wheels is that we ain't the ones that's making them. Somebody else is making them. That's the problem. The same thing with the other thing. You cannot change people's habits and ways. But the thing that we should be doing is exploring our own people's habits and ways. And not somebody who come from 12 time zones away. Carrie, you stay in Detroit, don't you?
No, in Dallas.
Oh. Well, you know what I heard about Detroit? They're getting ready to bring immigrants in to occupy Detroit. Immigrants with skills, supposed to start jobs and all that stuff and turn Detroit around. Well, I said
that some time ago. And rebuild all those houses.
Well, that's exactly what they're going to do. All these desert zones and what is now the hood. Or the urban areas, immigrants, Asians, Syrian refugees are going to come into these areas, and they're going to, they're going to take them over. Here in St. Louis, we have 80,000 Bosnian refugees. They brought in 30,000 at one time, then another 30, I think another 10,000. They got 80,000 of them in South St. Louis. They have formed their own little small country over there. Ain't none of them unemployed. That's what's going to happen. But here's the point. Is that not an opera? Because Bosnians, they're Muslims, and they like halal products. They like halal beef. They like halal goat. And is there not some brothers down there in your area, Kerry, that's got a farm? What's the name of that farm? I can tell you exactly where it's at. It's on Carver Drive in Fort Valley, Georgia. New African Products. You know where that is?
No.
Well, it's in Georgia. But that there is a source, and they got these agents that's coming in with a market. And they don't understand the infrastructure in this company. So they will buy from black folks. Whites won't buy from black folks. But agents that's coming here as immigrants, they will buy from black folks because you serving a need.
Brother, I agree with you 100%. The top 10% can do it, with no question. But that's not who we are concerned about. We're concerned about the 90%. See, when you
well, it's going to be the top 10% has got to educate the 90% because those what we send them to school now is not doing it. If you care about that 90%, that's another thing. If you care about that 90%, then you will go about doing it the right way.
Well, let me ask a question. For the African American community, if not, would a black president win?
Well, that was a fad right there. And another thing,
okay.
we weren't in position to really use a black president like we supposed to use. If we had blacks that was iron mining in the Congo, where you could go to Obama and say, "Look, we need a Marine battalion to protect our interests." That's how you use a president. You need
well,
to go in and kick down markets in other countries.
Going to the president and bringing it back to the 90s.
Pardon me?
Why isn't the 10% going to the president and bringing it back to the 90s?
Because the 10% is working for other people. Not all of them. You got your Jay-Z. He's doing a damn good job in what he's doing. You got your Magic. He's doing a pretty good job in what he's doing. But there's much more to be done. And you got people out there that's doing the wrong thing and would love to sit down and listen to somebody with an excellent plan.
You know, a couple
Jay-Z's
of things.
Jay-Z's doing a good job, brother. Jay-Z's doing a good job.
He's acting as an agent for Major League Baseball players. That's a good job.
which is another major issue as far as I'm concerned. When we have our young boys who want to, who aspire to be basketball players and football players and not focusing on science and engineering and understanding how to read and write within the society that they're a part of, but they want to bounce a ball or throw a football or hit a baseball up and down a field. Brother, there's nothing wrong with that.
That's a market, man. What's wrong? You know what's wrong with us in baseball? Yeah, not baseball, but basketball.
There's nothing
we
wrong
place,
with that, but at the end
you know,
of the day,
no,
you just
let me
have
show
a
you
lot
what's
of
wrong
players
with.
Making a lot of money that does not transition into any economics for black folks
but
in general.
But that's not their fault. That's black society's fault.
I would much rather put my money in an established black bank and let them make interest versus a white bank. But there has to be a black bank to do that. And a lot
well,
of these organizations, a lot of these brothers and the Magic Johnsons of these days could do that. But once again, it's as though those individuals are on a leash and a very short leash because it doesn't transition into black community wealth. Magic Johnson's not doing anything in my neighborhood that I could actually take and put into something that is black.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's making it. He's making money. But
well, Magic Johnson is doing Magic Johnson is doing a lot of things, just like Jesse
level.
Jackson and Al Sharpton done a lot of things too. Why do you think you have race-specific scholarships that we're not taking advantage of? That was because of the efforts of Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton back in the day. We have all our children playing basketball and football, especially in colleges. These colleges are taking in tremendous amounts of money and revenue. And providing scholarships, they provide scholarships for those sports that our children are not participating in. Our children need to be participating in all those sports, taking the money off the table.
Carrie, let me ask the question, please.
Okay.
When will grown men stop being satisfied with trinkets and be satisfied or decide to make a mark themselves in this life? My God, why are we discussing this economic situation like this? Grown men playing basketball and football, that's something young men should aspire toward. No,
you doggone right they should aspire to it. Where's the scholarships coming from? In the last three years, I trained. Let me tell you what I do. I train baseball players. In the last 3 years, I have trained players that have taken full scholarships, Xavier, Kentucky, St. Louis University. Where else were they going to get the money coming out of the hood to take those scholarships?
Why can't those young men and any other black man who wants to have, since you all want to, it's all about economics, why can't they aspire to own the team? Why do they have to aspire to play on it?
Well, you got to learn the business first, right? I could not go to Harvard to learn how to become a structural steel erector. I had to do that for 20-some-odd years before I learned it.
When we had the Negro Leagues, why weren't we doing it then? See, again, we're in the same ugly cycle of foolishness.
You know, you didn't do it in the Negro League because the major leagues came and bought up your players. That's why.
Why did you allow that?
And here's another point. Here's another thing, too. In sports, not only is sports the opportunities is the players on the court and the field. You got sports medicine. You got concessions. You got agents. You got trainers. You got coaches that can go on and coach for college teams. You got umpires. You got landscaping. You got the audio. You got the video. Look at all the opportunities that spring off of professional sports that we need to be taking advantage of.
You know, y'all just took my show on mental illness somewhere.
Carrie,
what?
I would just like to say I love the open opportunity of conversation, but I'm kind of not understanding how we as educated men would delve so far off topic into a conversation that's not making any sense as far as the topic that we were talking about.
Well, she was talking about mental illness.
I think you've said a lot, so it's my turn, if you don't mind. I put my phone on mute because I knew you weren't going to be quiet for a minute. The thing is we need to stay on topic. We need to be a part of a solution instead of an argument on a radio station. because
oh, I
this is our
cards
part. There are people
minutes.
Listening. You know, this,
yeah,
this
y'all went
part.
Everywhere but Bill Mills. I think we started off on mental illness, but we went way somewhere else tonight. And you know, and I think we should kind of close out with mental illness because that was a topic tonight. There's so much that we didn't get to in terms of mental illness and where we are as a people in our community and how we're suffering from it. And so we probably do want to close out the last, what we got, about 20 minutes, talking about mental illness and what are the solutions? How can we fix it for our community? And where are safe places that people can go to when they have issues with mental illness? Because one thing I didn't bring up tonight, and I do want to go there, there's so many situations that are coming up now, like the woman in D.C. that they say took her car and, you know, ran into the Capitol, and the Navy Yard shooter. Were those situations of mental illness or Manchurian candidates? Because those things are happening, and they are existing in our world. And so, you know, one thing we have to be careful of is both of those had histories of mental illness, even though the lady was just very recent after she'd had her child. But I think the young man, the Navy Yard shooter, had a history of mental illness and also had a history of spending lots and lots of hours playing video games. And so recently we did a show where we did research and found out that the manufacturers of a lot of these video games, they are tracking who's on these games for hours and hours at a time. And they know the people that are spending 40 hours a week playing a video game. So my question is, where do you seek mental health counseling where your information about your medical history is not going to be passed on to a third party so that someone other than who you sought counseling from will know your information or know about your medical history?
Carrie, this is Paul. You know, since you want to deal and since you don't want to separate yourself from this society and so that you can really heal yourself from a holistic perspective, I want to tell you how to deal with this mental illness. If you have children in the school system today and they suffer from a list of ADHD, bipolar, autism, list just goes on and on, you need to get them some medical attention. You need to go ahead and schedule them some psych evaluations within this society. Because this is how you, if you are not able to function in this society, they do have a place for you, and it's called prison. And so understand that the school system, if you're not functioning in a method that they deem as acceptable, because you didn't find the school system, you are subject to whatever rules that are put in place by the legislators, not the actual school board members, but the legislators. If you don't adhere to the rules that are being put in place, and if you find yourself mentally unstable, then you're a danger to yourself. So I would go ahead and recommend that all of the people who want to continue to participate, go ahead and go get you some drugs, because they'll get you plenty of drugs to put you on to help calm yourself down, because, see, you're out of control. See, mental people.
But see, the problem is, should you have a regular primary physician that you trust to say, listen, I got a problem? Or, I mean, because I don't think there are mental hospitals anymore. Are there long-term mental hospitals anymore? Remember, we used to call them insane asylums. They don't exist anymore, do they?
Still are, but part of in terms of answering your question in terms of how can an individual seek it or if they feel unsafe that they can traditionally, it's best, if at all possible, to have a primary care provider, because that provider in insurance world nowadays is the gatekeeper to be able to refer you for mental health or mental counseling. The other thing is that it's quite easy if you have any reasonable comparable insurance to get care. But if you don't have insurance, if you live in any large urban area or you can get to one, You can go through a county program. There's some special services at mainly any county hospital, because even if you don't have funds or resources or insurance, you can still be seen. They'll assign you a primary care provider. Then you can be referred for mental health or behavioral health care. So that's one of the ones. But in Cook County, and as with a lot of other counties that I've researched, Cook County has 12 outlying clinics to serve all of Cook County and Chicago. But last year they closed 6 of those 12. So the secondary effect of that is that now you have a lot of individuals that, because the arrest rate went through the roof as well. So you have an inordinate amount of individuals that should be receiving mental health assistance and care and treatment that are now getting into the criminal issues and problems, and now they're going to jail. They're being processed in jail. So it has a significant effect when minorities, particularly the African-American community, they don't have adequate access to mental health care.
Hmm. And, you know, people don't realize environmental issues are huge in who develops mental illness. People who are homeless, there's a lot of stress in being out there trying to, you know, deal with whatever's going on in our world on a day-to-day out there on the streets. You know, people who are in prison, you know, trying to deal with the stress of, I'm sorry, say what?
I have a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't, and you know, I'm just going to, I'm going to use words that the average listener probably could agree with in the African-American community. Why can't a white man be crazy and go to an insane asylum, but a black man, he crazy, he have to go to the state penitentiary?
That's a good question. Well, you know what?
That's because in jail a lot of times, and I've done clinical rotations in county, that is because, well, we've all heard of the prison industrial complex. Part of what happens we already know that black men are disproportionately sentenced versus their white counterparts. And that's because I think one of the other individuals had said it earlier. I mean, it's by design. That's how the system is. But in terms of breaking that cycle, that goes back and speaking to mental illness, because in Cook County alone, 65% of the approximately 9,000 men that are in Cook County jail have some form or reported form of mental illness. But very few of those are actually getting the treatment and care even while they're in jail. So there's no separate mental illness court. They're treated just like everybody else. I'm not saying if a person who has a mental illness gets a pass when they commit a crime, but I don't think that they should be treated the same or should have to go before the same proceedings if they have a mental illness, and also if that mental illness had not been identified and treated.
Hmm. One thing I also found out in research that some of this is genetic, so, you know, or biological. And I would venture to say, you know, that so that you don't have children who suffer from mental illness down the road, you should be careful who you have your children by. Would that be safe to say? Anybody?
I know I would. My mother
Mental illness, like anything else, it carries a genetic proponent. And the closer that it is to home, the more likely it is genetically that that individual may have some or quite a considerable amount of being able to have a mental illness. But mental illness can also come from trauma a lot of times in terms of particular mental illness. But I know depression is very high in the black community, and a lot of people who have mild to severe to moderate depression don't go, but in a lot of cases, those that want to go do not have the access.
Well, you should do background checks on who your son and daughter is going to marry.
Yeah. You probably got a point. I agree, and I agree 100% for your own safety. Well, one thing I found in research that I'm looking for in my notes is that, and I have to wonder about this, you know, a lot of these clinical trials that they do on these meds before they actually put them out on the market, who are they choosing to go into those experiments? Because if you, let's just say, I'm just saying, if you take a group of 60 white people and you give them a psychotic drug, will that psychotic drug work the same for an African-American person? Because are we wired different? You know what I'm saying? So are some of these meds not working for us because the same amount that will work for a Caucasian male may not work for an African-American male? Does that make sense?
I think that's
yes,
a
it does. That's why they
here.
when they decide that they're going to give you a particular drug, they have to titrate that drug, meaning that they may start you off when something. And actually, they have classes of medication that are specific to African Americans because it has a higher propensity to work than in their white counterparts.
Okay. I'm just wondering. I mean, because you know, I see. You know, I think Paul and I talked off air about Ambien. You know, Ambien. You know, that's a sleep, a drug that they're giving for sleep, what is it, sleep disorders. But people are getting in cars and driving while they're asleep and killing people and all that. Is that dealing with mental illness or is that the medicine or what is it? Because, you know, I'm afraid to think that a drug that's supposed to help me sleep would actually make me pick up a gun and take it out in the middle of the night while I'm still asleep and go kill somebody.
Here. Gary, let me say this while you're on the subject of drugs. What we should be looking at and what we should be thinking about, especially as African American people, is our diet instead of utilizing drugs to address these issues.
Yeah.
I think a good 50-60% of the time when a mental illness is presented, it can be dealt with through diet, through the right measure of minerals and vitamins and things of this nature, through meditation, through the relieving of stress. Medicines and these pharmaceutical-grade drugs are not always the thing that African Americans should go to first. We should look at naturalistic, holistic means to address our issues and understand that the pharmaceutical-grade drugs also have side effects that go along with them, too. Sometimes the side effect is worse than the actual thing that you're taking the drug for in the first place. So let's not push people, you know, constantly toward drugs. Let's look at therapy from a psychologist, meditation, vitamin therapy, things of this nature also.
Let me ask, why is it that in the hood, unfortunately, when we have Uncle, you know, Joe or Aunt Susie who hasn't been on her meds, why do we call the police to solve a mental health issue? Why don't we have something else in this country to address that? Because too often when the police, you know, show up, our loved ones end up dead. Why are we using police? I'm sorry.
We used to. When a relative got out of hand back in the 40s and the 50s and the 30s and things like that, when a relative got out of hand, the men of that family or the women of that family would get that person, take them somewhere else and get them calmed down, get them the nutrients and things that they needed to calm down. But because we are so disjointed now and we're so anti-family and we're so pro-police, the minute something presents itself that we can't deal with effectively, we got to call somebody else. We got to call some outside force. But this is not always necessary. All we need to do is go back to what we used to do, to our roots, to the way our ancestors used to handle things, and we could solve a lot of this. But because we don't want to, we're ashamed of our African roots, or we're ashamed of the way that African Americans lived prior to 1950. We don't want to do these things. Everything now is a pill or an immediate solution from the police or something. This is unnecessary.
I agree. And, you know, y'all, another thing that I find strange is that our celebs, you know, Caucasian or African American, the minute they do something stupid, they say, I'm going to rehab. You know, I got a drug addiction, I got a sex addiction, I'm going to rehab. And they go and you know, and they go seek counseling, and they come out, and, you know, 90% of the time they're better. Why is it that we accept that our celebrities can have, you know, off moments or be a little mental, and they can go seek help, and that's acceptable. But in our own communities, we don't look at getting help for mental illness is acceptable. Why do you think there's a difference there? Anybody?
Because our congressmen and senators are doing it too. And, I mean, we're seeing the latest rash of these politicians that are doing the same thing, even that have purchased drugs.
that have issues, and then, oh, by the way, I'm going to go into rehab. There's no jail time. There's no anything. But we don't get that same latitude, and I think earlier it is because it is becoming more and more acceptable for some, but not for others.
Exactly. Okay. And that's amazing, though. We can idolize somebody, and they can fall off the wagon and do all kind of crazy stuff, and they say, okay, you know what, I messed up, I'm going to go to rehab. And you know, 6 months later, they resurface, and we completely accept them, say everything's fine, but we can't accept other people within our communities who may be suffering from mental illness without stigmatizing them. Why would we do that?
Hey, Carrie, you know, I talked about this earlier. When you talk about discretionary income, in the African-American community, is really, it's like a mute point. It just doesn't exist, okay? And so if I work for the Golden Arches or if I work for Wally World, you know, I'm not going to use these names because I don't want to be sued. But, you know, if I work for these institutions, you know, they're not going to accommodate me if I check out for 6 months and go check myself into an institution. Okay, I'm not going to be able to support myself, you know, after 6 months. There are no guarantees. Who's going to take care of my children if I'm gone for 6 months? Okay, there's no man in the home anymore. Okay, the mother, the grandmother, she can't deal with these children for 6 months or so. Okay, so my children are going to go to foster care. I'm not going to take that chance to go and be a lab rat for 6 months and don't have a job to come when I come home. I'm just not going to take that chance.
I agree. Maybe that's it. I just don't know. Maybe that is it. But you know what, y'all? I think the answer is this. We got to do better. Because with the stresses of this world, I mean, with wars and rumors of wars and, you know, rumors of economic collapses, there's a whole lot of us that are just not handling it very well. And we're supposed to be our brother's keeper. And so if you see your brother or sister, you know, not acting themselves or, as Christopher said, talking to themselves or appearing to be, you know, odd in some odd way, you know, at least go and talk to them and see if everything's okay, because, you know, I know people myself that have just, I mean, gotten to a point where life was just too much. And it is, there are warning signs, and you can see it, like someone said earlier, about them giving their things away. I saw that with someone I know, and I said to them, hey, why are you doing that? And basically they were just tired of their physical health had started to deteriorate, and they were just tired. And at that particular moment, they knew they were in trouble, and I think eventually they saw some help. But I think we are a brother's keeper, and it is our responsibility to go and see if we can be of assistance or tell someone that we notice that their behavior is not the norm, and see if, you know, maybe mental health counseling is something that they need to look into. Y'all, this has been a great 2 hours. It went way too fast, and I so enjoyed each and every one of you guys. I really did. And everybody's contribution to tonight's topic. We covered mental illness in the African-American community, and I want to thank my panel, A.J. Houston, Christopher Bond, Paul, and Ty, for being with me tonight. Also, Brother Ronald Hurd with We All Be Radio stopped by, and Pianki. Thank you so much. Also, a reminder, y'all, we are here each and every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Central, 9 to 11 Eastern, and this is what we do. Next Friday night, we're going to be talking to some people about Dozier Reform School. There's a lot going on with that particular situation, murders, rapes, things like that. From what I understand, we're going to be talking to some people about that next week, 8 to 10 p.m. Central, 9 to 11 Eastern. Also, y'all, a reminder, the views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect that of Center Stage, the host, or advertisers. So listen, if you like what we do here at Center Stage, drop me a line this week, centerstageradio@yahoo.com, centerstageradio@yahoo.com. If you'd like to see us do a particular show, you know, you don't like something we did, tell us about something you'd like to see us do, again, drop us a line at centerstageradio@yahoo.com. Again, I'd like to say thank you to the panel for being with me tonight. Thank you, the audience, for listening, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye, y'all.